Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is John Cozy. John is a regular, and it's always a delight to have John back on again. We can talk about his latest writing. He's got another terrific article that he sent to me. John is a retired philosophy professor. He now writes on social, political, and economic issues. He taught for many years. He maintains his articles on his website, which is jcozy.com, and I strongly recommend listeners read them. I read all the ones that John writes, and he teaches me stuff every time. It's important information, the key issues of our time that you never get through the scoundrel media, and but you sure get it from what John writes and when he comes on this program. And he calls his new article, or the newest one he sent me, I guess it's his newest, he calls it Vendor Arithmetic, Underhanded Capitalism. John, it sure wasn't the kind of capitalism the Wharton School taught me over 50 years ago. If they had something else in mind, they didn't clue me, and it certainly isn't what I and others practiced in our small family business. We actually acted responsibly. What a lunatic idea that was. But we just couldn't imagine doing it any other way. Welcome,
yeah,
John.
You got taken just as the rest of us did.
I mean, imagine obeying the law and being a responsible good citizen. I don't think there are many folks around like that today, certainly not the big boys.
Well, no. I mean, the whole nation is one enormous criminal enterprise, Steve. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. And I have been trying to show that for a long time in a series of little articles. One of the things that most people either don't believe or don't want to believe is that this country does not exist for them. It exists for the business machine. And I'm not even sure it exists for businessmen. It's the machine, I think, that it exists for. Almost all of America's policies are based on keeping the machine going, regardless of its consequences. You got to keep the machine going. I mean, that's the only excuse there is for the military-industrial complex. We're keeping the machine going, and that's what Congress does, of course. So we have a fighter plane now being produced that nobody is ever going to fight in. Okay, but we've got to produce it anyhow because the machine has to keep going. It's an idiotic thing, but that's what's happened to America.
John, I absolutely agree with you. I use the term power structure. It's like a hidden power structure. Oh, we'd recognize some of the names if we heard them. But it really is the power behind the scenes that pulls the strings. And the top officials, government officials in Washington, salute and obey orders. And you've got the corporate types, the giant corporations at the head of their operation, the banks, the big ones, mainly the Wall Street ones. But all the giant financial interests. And, all the others, big oil, big pharma, big, you name it, and they're all in there, and they're the predators, and we're the prey.
Yeah, now, of course, most people, want to blame the business community, want to blame the political community, and hardly anybody wants to blame the real culprits in all of this, and I've been at this now for maybe half a dozen years trying to put the blame where it really belongs. People, the blame belongs on the American judicial system. It's the judicial system that has written our economy into the law. There's nothing in the Constitution that makes this country a capitalist nation or any kind of economic nation, as a matter of fact. Economics is not mentioned anywhere in the Constitution, but it is, in Supreme Court decisions. And the justices, if they don't come right out and say so in the opinions themselves, but they certainly have not been quiet about it in their personal writings. Lewis Powell, before he became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, openly made speeches and wrote pieces on how he would encourage not only the business community in general, but the Chamber of Commerce to put justices in the Supreme Court that would openly, mind you, make this country an extreme, raw, capitalist nation. And he's pretty much pulled it off. But Americans never criticize the court. And the court is the real culprit. And it's been the culprit since 1803. In Marshall's decision,
Marbury versus Madison.
Yeah, in Marbury versus Madison, the justices really laid out what they were up to. They were taking over the government, and they were not concerned with justice. I mean, Marbury, even the opinion says, deserved his appointment. But then they never gave it to him. Well, that's a hell of a thing for a justice system to do, say somebody deserves employment, not give it to him. And that set the tone for the court ever since. It doesn't matter what a just decision would be to the court. The only thing that matters is who gains, and it ain't the ordinary citizen in this country who gains from Supreme Court decisions.
Boy, it sure isn't, John.
It's the community who gains, okay?
I know you've written a lot about the courts, and occasionally I do it as well. I haven't done it for a while, but I sure have done it and talked about some of the justices that sit on it, especially the federal courts, but I guess state ones too. But the Federalist Society, this extremist right-wing group, they have enormous influence getting their people put on the bench. And, they operate they're rogues. I mean, they're just plain rogues. And they serve business and power and imperial interests and the rest of it. And ordinary people are just shut out and harmed in so many ways.
Yeah, but, well, I'm a bit of a mathematician, a logician. And proof theory is something that interests me. And I've always wondered how you could really prove to the American people that the country does not exist for their benefit. And in a series of articles, I've been trying to do this, and the latest one is another attempt at it. What I have found is practices approved by the legal system that clearly are unjust and show how vendors profit at the expense of consumers. The first one I did, I think I talked to you about before, when a vendor, it's perfectly legal for a vendor to sell a product that doesn't work, but if a purchaser, a consumer, buys even a product that doesn't work with a check that doesn't work, the consumer can go to jail.
Oh, boy, indeed.
Now, why in the world would any judicial system have that kind of legal principle in it if justice was any concern of the legal system? Of course, it isn't. There are others. For instance, you get a mortgage on your house. The mortgage company can take that mortgage and sell it to any unscrupulous investor group it wants to do. And there's not a damn thing you can do with it. And I remember a number of years back, my wife and I were buying a house, and we decided we would not deal with a specific mortgage lender that we had known was unscrupulous. So we found another mortgage lender and got a loan, and lo and behold, within the year, they sold it to the company we didn't want to have anything to do with. And we don't have that choice. Consumers don't. Vendors have that choice, but consumers don't. If I have a perfectly good loan, and I have somebody, a person who's willing to pay me a decent sum of money and assume that loan and take over the payments, I can't do that. But the mortgage company can.
Oh, they sure can. And
yeah,
of course,
but you can't. You have to get the damn mortgage company's permission to do that, and they'll turn you down every time. You know? So, you know, and that's enshrined in the law. Okay? Now, that's why would a judicial system that cares about justice do that? I mean, I don't know. Now, the piece I wrote this week was, well, not this week, but this month, the last piece I wrote was about, something that's quite common, but I was induced to write it by what I heard on a power company executive say on television. He talked about what they were losing, how much money they were losing by people stealing power, and how much this was costing other consumers. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. If you're charging other consumers for what you're losing or what's being stolen, then you're not losing any money. If you're not losing any money, what are you complaining about? And furthermore, you know, how is it all right for a company, a power company, I don't care, a retail vendor who that charges higher prices to make up for shoplifting losses, an auto insurance company that charges higher premiums to make up for fraudulent claims? You know, how is it proper for those people to charge their honest customers for the losses caused to them by dishonest customers?
John,
what kind of sense does that make?
It makes no sense. Can I give you an example that hit me, but it didn't really hit me. It just kind of hit me and bounced off because it's not my issue. It's Medicare's issue. But overall, my health is pretty good. I had a small problem. Turned out to be very small. And I had to get an ultrasound. I've had a couple of them before, and I don't recall what they cost the last time I got one, but had a good technician who knew what she was doing, and the whole procedure took maybe 15-20 minutes. And you know, a machine that didn't look all that involved to me. It wasn't massive in size, and I mean there were machines all over the place. It wasn't like an MRI. I've had MRIs, and the machine is much bigger. It looks more complicated. It sits in an individual room, et cetera, and so on. And this machine was just in an office situation, and 20 minutes, let's say, to the whole thing, and a day or two ago, the bill arrived. Well, I was copied. The bill went to Medicare. For this simple procedure, the bill was $1,875. Now, just imagine if I wasn't on Medicare, John, and had no insurance.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had the procedure, or else you wouldn't have paid.
Well, that's exactly right. How many people could afford to pay a bill like that?
Nobody. You know, I mean, there were recent stories about the same operation, an appendectomy being performed in California hospitals. In one hospital, it cost more than $20,000. In another hospital, it was less than two. I mean, you know, but the point is, what gets me is that the legal system allows this sort of thing that I've, you know, been getting at and trying to get at. But this one that I simply wrote about recently, you know, where the power company is charging honest customers for what it claims are losses to dishonest customers. And I can't do that. If my house gets robbed, I can't get down the street and take it from somebody else. I mean, if I want to protect myself, I've got to get insurance. I mean, why don't companies buy insurance for losses? Why are they charging people for them?
John, the old quote from Leona Helmsley, the hotel queen or whatever she was called, long gone, about the only the little people paying taxes. Well, you know, only the big people have license to steal. The little people have license to shut up and take it or else. And if you dare try to imitate the big people, they'll come down on you like a hammer on the back of your head. But the big powerful people, they can do anything they want. Don't pay taxes, steal, and then steal again. The worst that could happen to them, John, is once in a while they get a light tap on the wrist. You know, steal a billion, give back a couple of million. Nothing more said or done. They go right back out and repeat the same things over and over again. But when it comes right down to it, John, we both know this, the politicians are in bed with the criminal corporate feet people, the top officials, and they steal together and they profit together. It's an incestuous criminal enterprise. It's disgusting, John. We call this democracy. We call this, I don't know, America the Beautiful. My goodness gracious.
That's all true. That's all, you know, obvious. But the point that I keep trying to make is that the real culprit are the judges in this country.
Well, that's right.
They're the ones who would be charged with, you know, maintaining a fair and just system of government and economics and relationships, and they're the ones who are protecting all of the criminals. I mean, it's criminal enterprise. You just think about the banks and credit and consumer credit. You know, the interest on consumer credit is ridiculously high, okay?
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
And of course, it's all legal. All legal. And I say to myself, people, think about this. How come no bank has ever gone under because of consumer credit losses? You know, just a little bit of arithmetic. Ask yourself, why not? And the reason is simple. Because just as this electric company is charging honest customers for what it perceives as losses from dishonest companies, customers, the credit card banks, the banks issuing credit cards, are charging the people who pay their bills for the goods bought by the people who don't.
Oh, exactly.
I don't care what anybody listening to this program thinks. You know, your high credit card interest rate has nothing to do with you. It has to do with pulling in enough money from guys who pay their bills every month, okay, to cover the losses caused by the guys who don't pay their bills every month.
The credit card companies hate me, John, although I gave up using credit cards. I use a debit card. It saves the trouble. It's like writing a check without writing a check. I think
yeah,
it's marvelous. It works so well, but I have never in my life, I used a credit card going back to the 1960s, I have never once in my life paid 10 cents in interest to a credit card company. They hate me. They absolutely hate me.
I wrote it. There's a piece on my website. I don't know when I wrote it, a long time ago, but good credit is only good for bankers.
That's right.
You know, it's not good for people.
And by the way, John, I have to get this in so I don't forget it. The justices you talk about and write about concern me greatly, and they should concern everybody. But think of the cruel irony, John, to call them justices.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've made that point a long time ago. Yeah, I mean, justice, what a joke.
call them injustices that sit on the high court.
Yeah.
So that would be accurate.
Yep. Another one another example that I've written about somewhere or other, but became prominent in my mind the other day when I heard Romney making a speech saying he wanted to turn the country basically into a right to work nation where unions could not collect the union dues from people who didn't want to pay it. And I thought to myself, yeah, but you won't say anything about companies adding to the prices of their products to get the money that they spend on political contributions, lobbying, you know, and all sorts of other nefarious activities. There's no difference between that and a union charging a portion of its union dues to pay for political activity. Higher prices, you know, people think that companies are the ones who donate to charity and advertise by putting their names on buildings like sports stadiums and stuff. And, businesses spend their money on lobbyists, and businesses spend their money on political contributions. No, they don't. They spend your money. They get that money from you and the prices that they charge you. I mean, that's where it comes from. What would happen, do you think, if businesses had to pay in dividends their profits before they extracted any of that money, to shareholders, and then asked shareholders to contribute to their various funds, like this, contribute to this fund for charity and contribute to this one for political activity? It's how many shareholders do you think would make those contributions?
Not very many, John.
Yeah, you see, but you know, and that's okay for businesses to do it that way. It's perfectly legal, you know. It's perfectly legal, but damned if a union tries to do the same thing. Oh, no, we can't allow that. We got to make that illegal. We got to have right to work. You know, and I hope there are people in Wisconsin listening to us today. You know, if the people of Wisconsin are dumb enough not to recall their governor, then they deserve the fate they're going to get.
And they may not do it.
They may not do it.
Yeah,
no, I mean, look at what the English did. I mean, yeah, the Labour government that was in power, Tony Blair and his successor, Miliband, you know, were terrible. They screwed up awfully. But you don't put the Conservatives back in power that you threw out before you put the Labour Party in. That's not going to help, but the British people did it. And what are they doing now? They're in double-dip recession. Okay, that's what's going to happen. You know, so I hope that, you know, there's some people listening to the show today from Wisconsin, or at least who have relatives or whatever in Wisconsin, who can call them all up and encourage them. People, get behind this recall, because if you don't, you're simply going to contribute to the right-wing movement to make labor more enslaved than it is at the moment.
John, do you recall the actual date? Is the vote in June?
Yeah. In about two weeks.
Two weeks
from Tuesday, I think.
My understanding is the polls have the two candidates neck and neck.
Yeah, I heard that too. And of course, the governor has a war chest that's, I think, something like 10 times as big as the Democratic candidate.
Oh, I believe that the Koch brothers support this guy, Scott Walker. Scott Walker, talk about a right-wing ideologue that absolutely screwed the people of the state. They shouldn't just vote him out, John. They ought to come and get him, storm the State House in Madison and haul that SOB out. And, you know, I don't believe in capital judgment, but there are some people I'd make an exception for, and he would be one of them.
Oh, I think we talked about it, as a matter of fact, the last time I was on. My view is that you take him out in the street, you strip him naked, and you get cattle prod and make him walk.
That sounds pretty good, John. I will settle. I honestly don't believe in violence. I will settle for a ball and chain, cracking rocks in scorching heat down in a place like Devil's Island, and in the wintertime going to the opposite environment in a place similar to, or at least with an environment like Siberia, the coldest part, of course, and do that every year on bread and water, meager rations. And if he balks, give him a rap on the back of the skull.
Yeah, I would love to see, you know, people like, what was his name, Diamond, Blankfein. I would see all. I'd love to see all these people forced, as the Romans did when they captured a leader of an opposing tribe. You know, march them through the streets of Rome. But I would do it again. Make them naked first, then march them through the streets of Rome.
Well, that sounds marvelous. Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan.
And Blankfein. You know, all these guys. You know, just march them through all the streets and let people throw trash at them.
And the truth about these people, and listeners to this program know it well, I mean, these guys literally have license. Steal is the wrong word, John. I mean, their business model is grand theft, and we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. Going back enough years, John, we're talking about multi-trillions of dollars. And we know of minimally, since 2008, $9 trillion given to these banking crooks. And that's only what we know about. I think it's the tip of the iceberg. I think the real number possibly is two or three times that amount. And whatever they want, they get. Of course, the Federal Reserve is simply their private printing press.
Set up that way, and you know, that's another thing that people, nobody tells the people. I mean, everybody wonders, well, you know, why the Federal Reserve has done all this stuff for banks. Nobody in the media, I don't care, you know, newspapers, magazines, Wall Street Journal, television news, says, look, guys, the Federal Reserve is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the banks. I mean, it was set up that way, and if you don't know that, I mean, what kind of an idiot world is this?
Most people don't, John. Listen to this program, know it well. Most people don't. Most people think federal means federal, and of course, Federal Reserve does not mean federal. It's simply a name. It's camouflage, and it is absolutely a private system. In most countries, the system is private or a derivation thereof, basically private. There isn't too much in the way of public banking going on, but Ellen Brown comes on this program all the time, and she's the head of the Public Banking Institute. And in my book on Wall Street, I had a chapter. It was my concluding chapter. I thought that was the way to end the book. You know, a book about Wall Street fleecing America. And the last chapter was on public banking. And it's an idea whose time has come. It really came a long time ago. We've got to get rid of these predators. The only way to get rid of them is by mass public awareness and anger, not willing to take their mass criminality sanctioned by the people that voters are stupid enough to go out and elect. And we need to change the system, but the only way it can happen is for people to do it by themselves. It'll never be done any other way. And if you can't do it one way, you got to find another way. And if all of the peaceful methods fail, well, go out and be not so peaceful. Shake the system up and get rid of these bums, and let's have something taking their place, hopefully, that maybe will serve everybody. The odds are long, but if you don't try, it'll just get worse, and believe me, it's getting worse month by month, year by year. I dread what I fear coming. I really fear the hammer coming down full force.
Oh yeah, you know, it's bad. But you know, if I can just continue this a little bit, you know, people got to realize that the wealth of the nation should belong to the nation and not private individuals. Because once you give private individuals that kind of wealth, I mean, corruption is inevitable. And if you're gonna stop corruption in a government, you have to take the wealth away from people. You have to do it. You can't let people get really rich. If they get rich enough to corrupt the nation, they will. And we have allowed that to happen. And you know, that's just a tragedy of Western civilization, actually, not just America, but Western civilization. I mean, that the central bankers, all of which, none of whom are governmentally are elected officials by their people, you know, are telling nations what they have to do to please the bankers. And, of course, the continent's going to hell. And that's okay, too. I mean, you know, Western civilization has been such a horrid actor in world affairs since the end of the Roman Empire. I mean, not only killing each other, but killing people everywhere else in the world. That it deserves to be vanquished.
It really does, Charlie.
I mean, you know, that you can't. There's no way to justify Western civilization. When Hillary Clinton said that she thought that America was still a force for good in the world, I almost puked. I mean, it's never been a force for good in the world.
Boy, that is true, John. We have to take a break. I'll go along with Gandhi, who, when asked what he thought about Western civilization, he thought it was a good idea. We certainly haven't seen very much of it for a few hundred years or longer. John, we'll take a fast break, and then we'll come right back. Welcome back. On with John Cozy, talking about predatory capitalism and related issues. It's a very disturbing disturbing reality, John. What goes on, and I think more people catch on all the time, but we really need a huge majority. You know the way things pop into your head every now and then? One thought popped into my mind. My memory goes back a long way. And yours a good ways, John, I know. And we were around when some of the more recent history was made, going back the middle of the last century and so on. And I remember the 1952 presidential race when Dwight Eisenhower matched off against Adlai Stevenson. It was an Adlai Jr., but this was Adlai Sr., and Adlai was the Democrat. And after one of his campaign stops, a woman came up to him and he said, he was a governor at that time, and she said, Governor, all intelligent people support you. And he thanked the woman and said, well, he said, thank you, madam. Unfortunately, we need a majority.
Yeah, I remember Adlai.
He was an intellectual, and that was a classic comment, I thought.
That's right, sure, it's a classic comment, and you know, it was perfectly accurate. Yeah.
I think more people catch on now, but it moves at a snail's pace. Still, most people turn on their television set to, you know, the usual Fox, CNN, CBS, whatever, and they think that those people actually provide real news and information, and they don't know that they lie, they deceive, they support the power structure of the country, they routinely betray their viewers and their readers. So whether we're talking about CNN or NBC or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post, they're all together doing the same thing, betraying the public. And anybody who follows these sources and thinks they know what's going on, they know nothing. They know absolutely nothing. Well, more people are catching on. The change comes very slowly, and they move away from these people, or they don't pay attention to them as much as they used to, and they realize that they can go and find real information elsewhere. Anybody with a computer, anybody listening to this program, absolutely knows that there are many wonderful sources of real information. I hope this program is one of them, and people who listen, I think, feel that way. I have a decent-sized audience listening either live. Most of my listeners come through archives because it's so convenient. You know, you don't have to listen when the program comes on. You can listen at your convenience. If you like a program, you can listen to it again. And it's real information because of guests like you, John.
Well, I mean, thank you, but I don't know what, you know, whether or not anything any of us do, you know, is works at all. But let me end my argument here, and then we can talk about whatever we like. You know, there's this Latin expression, caveat emptor, that I'm sure every reader has heard sometimes or other, and most readers think that it's just a maxim telling people that they need to be careful when dealing with vendors, okay? But it's not. It's a legal principle. It's been written into case law a long time ago. And I ask myself, and I think every reader ought to ask himself, two questions. Why caveat emptor? Why should the buyer beware? Why not caveat vendor? Why shouldn't the vendor have to beware? But even worse, in a just society, why should anyone have to beware? And the fact that we have a legal principle telling the population that in dealing with vendors you need to beware means absolutely that the society is crooked and it will not defend you from crime. You have to defend yourself. And if that's not proof that there's something, you know, frightfully wrong with America, Western civilization, and capitalism, nothing will ever convince you that there is.
Oh,
are you there?
I sure am here, John, and I absolutely agree with you.
I mean, that's such a simple proof, you know, that the culture is corrupt to the core. It's so simple, and it's absolutely irrefutable. You know, in a just society, no one should have to beware. And the fact that somebody has to beware in this society means that the society is corrupt. And I hope every listener has caught this argument and takes that seriously. There's no way to refute it. It's as valid as the Pythagorean theorem. That's how strong that proof is, and everybody ought to realize it.
They sure should. Yeah, again, I think more people slowly catch on, but it's way short of what's needed. And on top of that, understanding should lead to action for self-defense. But most people don't go that far, even when they understand that things are not the way they should be, and that they're personally harmed by so much of what happens. But they still don't do much of anything to stop it, and that's where the rubber meets the road. Because
yeah,
it's up
and
to
I wrote
us.
A piece about that, you know, and not too long ago, but long enough ago for me to have forgotten when I did it, but. The point was that good people have a hard time with it because they have a hard time acting, you know, in ways that they would consider not good. You know, I mean, that's the advantage that criminals have over decent people. You know, I mean, you say you have this aversion to violence in dealing with this sort of thing. Yeah, I do too, you know. But then you say to yourself, well, but if we don't do that, what do we do? And a question becomes hard to answer. And the more difficult it is to answer, the more difficult it is, you know, for people to say, well, gee, I can do this. But they don't know what to do because everything that they think they have to do is something they abhor. It paves the road for evil is what it does, and I, you know, I don't know any solution for it. That's why I propose things like, you know, stripping people naked and make them walk down the streets. You don't have to, you know, hit them with hammers or something. You don't have to injure them, shame them. But I don't know. It's not done work. Apparently, Americans have an aversion to shaming people. I don't know why. There was a story I read. I think it happened in England, but I'm not sure. There was this couple invited all of these people to their wedding, a very elaborate wedding, and then didn't end up paying the vendors who provided all the stuff for the wedding. the vendors got smart and got a list of the guests of the wedding and started sending them individual bills for their portion of the wedding. And it didn't take long for the shame to reach the people who got married, and they quickly paid the bills. You know, shame is a marvelous thing, but we don't use it. I mean, you know, we'll put a politician in jail for having done something. They'll give her, you know, like the people in the Nixon administration who went to jail, okay? Yeah, they went to jail. When they came out, they were heroes. They weren't shamed. And I say to myself, what the hell sense does this make? You know, they would have been better off if we hadn't put them in jail, but if we had shamed them. I mean, they went on, or all of them went on to do quite well in life because, you know, they weren't shamed. They served their time and they weren't shamed. I don't know why we won't do it. There are so many things we could do. You know, you dislike what's going on at a bank, a big bank. You know, get out your phone book and list every phone number for that bank and pass it on to all sorts of people saying, call these people 20 times every day. You know, and when they answer, you know, make up some sort of conversation about, oh, I must have the wrong number, or aren't you so-and-so, you know. Just keep them on the line and tie them up so that they can't make any money while you got them on the line. And a simple thing like that, you could disrupt every major bank in this country, because no major bank in this country can do business without access to its telephone.
That is a very interesting idea, John.
It's a kind of denial. I mean, the computer hackers do it all the time. They call it denial of service. You know, you can do it with your telephone.
That's
if,
exactly
if
right.
If all the people in the Occupy movement, you know, wanted to take down a bank in New York or any other city, all I have to do is take their telephone, their cell phones that they're carrying in their pockets and listening music on, you know, and instead of doing that, pass out a number of all the telephone numbers at a certain bank and call them over and over and over and over again. That bank would be out of business in a week. You know, it's easy to do, people, and it's legal. There's nothing illegal about calling a phone number.
There's so many.
And I don't know why people. I don't know why people can't think of this stuff. I just don't. You could do it. Somebody at a bank could leak the phone numbers of the executives, their private phone numbers. You know, they could leak their home telephone numbers. People could call their wives and children over and over and over again, saying, oh, you're the son of this so-and-so crooked so-and-so bank. You know, get him on the phone. Shame these people. You don't have to get violent. You don't have to cause a riot. You can do it with the technological tools that these people depend upon to do business. It's so easy, but nobody does it. And I don't know. I must be some kind of weirdo because I have these weird ideas that nobody else has. But I don't know why nobody else has them.
John, there are so many other things that can be done too. One of my favorites is, to the greatest extent possible, boycott the products of the giant corporations. Now, you can't boycott everything, but you can choose your products very carefully. You can buy generics over brand names, although, you know, somebody's got to make the generics. It might be the people whose brand names you're boycotting. You can live simply. My formula is live simply. There's so much stuff people buy.
Yeah, let me tell you a story, Stephen. You're going to get a kick out of this one, I hope. My son-in-law was having a house party one day that we were invited to, and I went in the house, and my son-in-law and some friends of his were all standing there with cans of Coors beer in their hands. And I looked at him and I said, what the hell are you doing drinking Republican beer? You know, I said, no wonder you people are stupid. Don't you understand that Bud is wiser? Of course, brought down the house, but I don't know if it had any effect. You know, I mean, I don't know why people do it.
Well, people, you know, people watch and listen to these horrible ads that run, and they're even, you know, I mean, they keep running because they stimulate people to go out and buy the products and services. But tune them out. Tune them out, ignore them, and live simply. It's amazing. Most people spend a lot of money on stuff. They get tired of very quickly, and it passes by, and then they go out and buy something else. It's like buying new clothes with the changing fashions. That everything that goes around comes around. You know, what's in vogue today goes out of vogue, and then a year or two or so on comes back into vogue. For men, men's fashions don't change quite the way women's do. But you know, men's goes from narrow to wider lapels to narrow lapels. Or same thing with ties and shirts with longer or shorter collars or whatever. And I mean, buy stuff as cheaply as possible. Stick with it. Ignore the fads of the day. Don't throw your money away. Live simply in all respects. And it's amazing. I simply can't imagine doing it any other way. I don't even call it frugality. I just call it common sense.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only one thing wrong with the trying to do that with the fashion world. The fashions may come around, but the bodies change.
Well, you have to change the sizes. that can be a problem for a lot of people. But but my point is, people spend money on a lot of stuff they don't need. They soon tire of it. I don't know whether they even think about it. But there's a lot of stuff crammed in people's closets and cupboards and drawers and so on that they spend good money on that they got minimal use out of. And why did they throw their money away? They wasted their time. They wasted their money. But you know, America is addicted to shopping and other things that that really don't enrich people's lives. Well, get away from it. Get away from that addiction. It's like a smoker who wants to quit or a drinker who wants to quit. And if you break free and get on the other side, it's a whole new world, and you wonder why you ever let yourself get hooked in the first place. It's the same with shopping. Get off of it. Stop this stuff. Stop supporting the corporate crooks that harm our lives so much.
It goes back to something I said earlier in this discussion today. You know, a lot of that stuff is sold to people because you have to keep the machine going. If people quit buying that stuff, the machine would grind to a halt. And that is the biggest thing wrong with a capitalist free market society. Capitalism doesn't care one hoot about people or serving people or, you know, conserving the earth that we live on. Its only function is to accumulate money. And if you stopped buying all of that stuff, which I agree, most of it, I mean, I don't have a lot of that stuff. I don't have a smartphone. Let me put it that way. But if people stopped buying that stuff as they really should, then capitalism would collapse.
It really would, John. The easiest target of all, literally the easiest target, you could put them out of business so easily. They're defenseless. The major media, the media scoundrels. You tune out those people on television. They thrive on eyeballs. You take away those eyeballs and they go out of business. They can't function with newspapers, publications, the stuff that lies to you. They don't inform. They lie. Stop buying their stuff. Absolutely stop buying them. They'll close up shop, they'll wither, they'll disappear. That's easy. You know, you got to brush your teeth, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. And, of course, we all have to do that. You don't have to throw your money away on extraneous that you don't need. But there's some stuff that you do need, and you got to buy from somebody, and even a generic, maybe the big boys make it. So buy what you need and forget the rest. But the easiest, the banks, they deal in money. You certainly don't want to boycott money, but you can bank at a local bank. You don't have to bank at the corporate media, at the corporate. At a Wall Street bank, you can bank around the corner. Your deposits are insured. if I remember, I think it's up to $250,000. Not too many people put that amount of money in the bank. So your deposits are safe. If the bank closes up, goes bankrupt, your money isn't lost. You get your money back. So do business with them. But again, the corporate media, they are so vulnerable. We could put them out of business almost overnight if enough people realize it and decided, hey, I'm not going near these people anymore. No more money spent, no more eyeballs on their screens, no more putting up with their lies. They are gone. They're history, and that is really, really simple. It could work. Try it.
Yeah, you know, there's an argument that I've used on numerous things that applies to the media and applies to a lot of stuff. And I ask myself, take, you know, the three credit reporting companies that give you credit scores, okay? They all buy the same credit scoring technology from some company in Massachusetts. Okay, they all buy it, and they all come up with three different scores. And I say to myself, how is that possible mathematically? How could it be possible for three companies using the same technology to come up with three different scores on people? It has to be either they're not using the technology correctly, or else the reporting that they're getting from vendors is faulty, or else their own procedures are faulty. If they were doing the job properly, they would all come up with the same score. And the fact that they're not coming up with the same score means that there's something wrong with what they're doing. Okay? Simple as that. The same thing is true about the press. If the press reported truthfully what was happening, okay, they would all report the same damn thing. And the fact that they don't means that they're not doing it truthfully. It's as simple as that.
It sure is.
You know, it's the same. You want to tell a reporter that you're lying. He says, I'm not lying. I say, yes, you are. Because if you weren't lying, you'd be telling the same story that so-and-so is telling.
You know what comes to my mind, John? This is a little bit different, but it's similar at the same time. It's been a long time, but I can remember a publication or two or three doing a study on how accurate so-called CPAs prepare people's income taxes, and they gave the same return, you know, with enough wrinkles in it so that the CPA had to earn his or her fee, and they gave it to a bunch of them. I don't know how many, half a dozen or whatever, and each one came up with a different set of figures.
Yeah. Well, even the IRS does it. You know, you call IRS four times with the same problem, you get four different answers.
That's exactly right. And you're not getting a CPA on the phone when you call the IRS. I haven't done it in a long time.
But the point is that, you know, if all of these people did things properly, they would all have the same answer, but they don't, which means that the whole damn thing is a mess, if not just a crooked mess.
It's a crooked mess. It's a big crooked mess. And it keeps getting worse, John. It literally keeps getting worse. And again, the politicians, the corporate crooks have the politicians in their pocket. They're really in each other's pockets because, the system pays off on both ends, and only the public gets left holding the bag, scammed every time, cheated, maligned, and if the public dare raises its voice in protest, the cops can come and crack your skulls or crack your knuckles, and this is the kind of stuff. We were invaded last weekend, John. NATO was in Chicago last weekend.
I heard about that.
it was right. It was right at the edge of my neighborhood. I mean, one of the big confrontations took place very close to where I live, and we felt like the entire place was on lockdown. We literally, for the first time in all the years I've lived in my building, we got a set of instructions on what we could do and what couldn't be done. Uh, they part of the building was locked down. I mean, I felt like a prisoner. I felt like, you know, this is my city. I don't want to fear that, you know, I mean, if I happen to go in the wrong direction, I'm going to get my skull bashed. And this is what Chicago was. Before NATO arrived through Monday, and the Chicago police upheld their notorious reputation as an absolute savage, brutal force. I mean, absolutely criminal what they did, you know, supporting this NATO killing machine. And they were cocooned at McCormick Place, surrounded by I don't know how many thousands of cops and protective barriers and whatever, and how they got from their luxury hotels to these places. Maybe they helicoptered them in. I don't know how they got them there. From the airport, they just closed down the highway and gave them a massive police escort. But this is what I had to live through for 4 days last weekend and see many dozens of people arrested. The ACL, the National Lawyers Guild in town, estimated 117, and a bunch of them were charged with offenses. There were five of them that were charged with terrorism. Completely innocent. And they're going to go to prison for many years, even though they did nothing. This was for NATO. This is what I had to live with and everybody else in the city.
Yeah.
Final thought, John. We're out of time.
Okay, Steve.
Oh, I didn't mean to end with a rant. I guess I did that, didn't
okay.
I? Oh, I'm still angry about last weekend. I could go on. We are out of time. John, many, many thanks. I'll shoot you a quick email. I look forward to getting you back next month. I invite all my listeners to tune in every Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern. Make it a regular habit. I got to jump off the air because I've got an interview coming up. Do make us a regular habit.